Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight's guest is Angela Wyman, who, among other things, is a former party pit dealer. I'll be asking her lots of questions about that, and Shaq has some other questions as well. Last week, we spoke about a 50% loss rebate, up to a maximum of $1,000 loss, giving you $500 the next day. We had several questions about where this was. Turns out it was at the Horseshoe Hammond, which is slightly east of Chicago. Apparently, if you already have a total rewards card from any Harrah's or Caesar's property, you're not eligible for this promotion. You have decided, Shaq, that radio hosting is not for you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I, in the interests of spending more time with my family, I decided that I have spread myself too thin, and it's not just the radio show. I run all my websites in a consulting business, and for my own sanity, I've decided to cut significantly back on the consulting and to let the radio show go. So this will be my last appearance as a co-host on the show.
Which is very disappointing to me. Richard Munchkin has agreed, a former co-host, has agreed to step back in, which is very exciting to me. I suspect that we haven't heard the last of Mike, though. We very well may get him to, as a guest periodically.
Oh, absolutely. I am very happy that Munch agreed to come back, and I really like the show and hope to be back as a guest as frequently as possible.
As a guest or maybe even a substitute co-host or something like that.
Absolutely.
In 10 days, it's the Super Bowl between Baltimore and San Francisco. Michael, you typically make a lot of proposition bets on that game. Last year, for example, you and I both took a bath on the no safety bet. If players want to bet props this year, what should they look for?
In general, with proposition bets, you want to bet unders. You can, on these sheets, there's all kinds of bets over and under just about everything, like number of touchdown passes and number of interceptions and number of field goals. Just if you're going to bet this stuff, bet the unders. And if there's a bet about whether or not something will happen like a safety, bet the no, because that's like betting under a half. I really think that if you just blindly bet the unders, you would have about a break-even chance. And if you shop around for the best lines, you would get the odds in your favor. Last year, of course, the safety really killed me. You have to lay anywhere from 8-1 to 10-1 that there won't be a safety. And the probability of a safety is about 5%. So you should be laying 19-1. So laying even 10-1 is a great bet. But when it hits, you know, it just wipes out all the good bets you made.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so that's my general strategy for betting Super Bowl props.
All right. Now, when the Revel opened in Atlantic City, they did not allow smoking. Shaq and I said, this is great. We want casinos without smoking. But I said, I don't think it's going to last. So we made a $100 bet that as of the end of 2013, which is still 11 months to go, there's going to be significant smoking at the Revelle Casino. Now, Mike, you've heard something about this?
It's rumored on my forum that the dealers at the Revelle are saying that the no smoking policy will come to an end on Valentine's Day. The Revelle has not made any kind of official announcement, but some people are saying, you know, with a great deal of certainty that the dealers are saying that the no smoking days are over. Now, some people think that they're going to go entirely smoking. Some people think they will just introduce a smoking section. So we'll have to wait to see exactly what they do. But I find this very disappointing. I'm a big advocate of smoke-free casinos. But nevertheless, I respect their decision, and I think the only way we're going to see smoke-free casinos is if the state steps in and prohibits smoking in public places.
So I think our actual bet was for 50% of the casino floor to allow smoking.
It was. And so I still have hope.
And I have since learned that every casino in Atlantic City is limited to smoking in less than 50% of the casino area. So if this is the case, I might be drawing dead no matter what the Revelle decides to do.
Well, I'm always one to look at the spirit of a bet. And if they... we'll have to see exactly what they do, but I'm not going to be a perfectionist. I'm going to look at the spirit of the bet and what they do, and we can negotiate from there.
As I would expect him to do. Michael is not a... I expect him to go for the spirit of the bet rather than the letter of the bet. Sometimes you make a bet with somebody, and after it's over, they tell you they were only kidding. So what do you do? Now, this came up recently with respect to a presidential election bet. So, Michael, why don't you set the stage for this, the actual bet that prompted this, and then we'll discuss it in some more generality.
Yes, this happened on my forum. Well before the election, somebody made the prediction that Romney was going to get more than a certain number of electoral votes, like 330, like way more than he would need to win. And somebody else responded saying, I will lay 2-1 that doesn't happen, that he gets less than the 330. Then the original person said, sure, you can just pay me now if you want. And that was the end of it until the election, and Romney did not get anywhere near 330. And the person who proposed the bet asked to get paid. And then the original poster said, I was just joking, you know, saying, sure, you can pay me now. Should have shown that I was just joking. And the other side said, no, sure is an acceptance of the bet. And there was a huge argument with people taking both sides. About 2/3 took the side that it was a bet. So what's your opinion?
Well, first of all, was a specific amount mentioned?
Yes, it was $50 to win $25.
Okay. So, often the only thing you can do if somebody reneges on a bet is to make a point not to bet with them again.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this as reneging on a bet?
I do. If you have mutual funds who make mutual friends who make bets, or mutual funds for that matter, it's probably smart to tell everybody about the situation. Sometimes the person who reneged can be shamed into paying off.
Mm-hmm.
If not, it's a good idea to let everybody know so nobody else is burned in the future. It's if somebody refuses to pay a bet, it says something about their character or personality or something.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that I thought this was a bet. We'll never know if the person really didn't intend to make the bet or not. You know, I think it's a common trick to make a bet, and if you lose, say, you know, try to weasel out of it saying, you know, we never finalized the bet, or I was joking, or make some excuse to not pay. You know, I don't go for that. You know, a bet is, there's a certain sanctity to a bet. And if you lose, you pay. And this also just goes to show that when you make a bet, make sure that the terms are understood and the acceptance is crystal clear.
Yeah, now this is a really small bet, too.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's reneging on this bet, I mean, there's some significant bets out there. Like, you know, you and I have made some handshake bets for $2,000 or something. And it would just never occur to me that either one of us would welch on it. But this was a small bet.
Yeah, some people just have no class and, you know, don't think nothing about welching on a bet.
Although I do know that I have bet Shirley a dollar on probably 30 different occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And I have won 22 of them and have yet to collect the first dollar on that. So I resent that you say she has no class, Michael. I expect you to
retract
that.
I said some people... I of course would never say that Shirley has no class, and I'm not saying that the person in the forum has no class either, because maybe he genuinely, you know, didn't think he was making a bet. I don't know, but people that deliberately welch on serious bets just have no class and just do not deserve to do business with anybody.
Okay. There's a pretty lady here in the studio with us. Why don't you tell us who she is?
Okay. Our guest tonight is Angela Wyman. Some of our listeners may already be familiar with Angela because she is the actress that stars as my student in all of my gambling videos, which you can find on YouTube. And you can also click on videos on my site, and it shows you where they all are. About a year and a half ago, I hired Angela to for a couple days to come down to the former Gaming Network studios, and she did an outstanding job as my student, and I think we had a great time doing the videos, and I hope to redo them all again with Angela another time in a more professional way. So Angela is also a former party pit dealer at the Golden Gate, which was mentioned in the introduction. And of the show, and she has done a whole host of other things. She played Tina in Tony and Tina's Wedding. She has been a magician's assistant. She's worked trade shows. She was a gondolier. She does Christmas carols at Lowry's, and just a real jack of all trades here in Vegas. So we're going to talk to her about all the many things she does, and hopefully pass on some good career advice to other people thinking about getting into those professions. So, Angela, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, thank you guys for having me. Thank you for that very kind introduction.
Oh, my pleasure.
In general, what is a party pit, and what makes it different from other pits in a casino?
The party pits tend to be staffed by attractive young ladies wearing smaller uniforms than the rest of the dealers. And the big difference
is... As in bikinis?
Bikinis, usually, yep. Sometimes you've got a little bit of extra fringe on them, but bikinis, fishnets, boots, that kind of thing. And what really makes them different is it's less about worrying about the serious rules of gambling and more about having fun. They're trying to create a party atmosphere. So you've got loud music, dancing girls. You might have go-go dancers in there as well.
So how did you decide to get started in this the profession?
I had just moved to Vegas and was looking for something different that was still in the entertainment field, which is primarily what I do, but I also wanted something that felt very Las Vegas, and dealing cards, well, I don't know what could feel more Vegas than that. So for me, it was a perfect fit. I would be trained to deal several different table games and get a chance to go dance.
Okay, and how much training did you need to be a party pit dealer?
I needed very little. The pits work one of two different ways when you're first getting into them. Either the casino itself will hire you and they'll train you just on the floor, or if you go through one of the agencies that staffs them, they actually send you to dealing school and you'll attend that for as long as they think you need to be a competent dealer. And I did not go very long.
Like, are we talking 3 hours? Are we talking 2 weeks? What are we talking about?
I went just a few days. I'm a very quick learner.
Okay. Now, are the rules in the party pit usually the same as the rules in the rest of the casino?
As far as odds and...
Whether they hit on soft 17, whether you get 3-2 for a blackjack or 6-5, whether they cut off a quarter deck or a half a deck, whether they... Something like that.
Okay. Those rules do tend to be the same throughout the casino. So if they're going to pay 3-2 in the party pit, then the other tables will usually be paying 3-2 as well. What might be different is the table minimums. Sometimes the party pits will keep a lower table minimum to encourage more players to come over. But as far as, yeah, when they're going to shuffle or how deep in the deck they'll cut, that's the same throughout any casino. Or, I'm sorry, throughout the casino.
So let's say an attractive young woman says, you know, I'm thinking about being a dealer, Angela. What are the pros and cons between being a party pit dealer and being a conventional dealer that wears the standard uniform?
Well, I think being a party pit dealer is a lot more fun. It's very different in that your job isn't just to deal the game and game security, which is any dealer's primary focus is security of the game. But your job then is also to be entertaining, to keep your players there for as long as possible, and to make sure they're having as much fun as they possibly can. So you're going to be a bit friendlier. It seems a bit more casual, even though the rules are the same. And it also mixes up your day. About half of the party pits, the girls rotate between dealing at a table or dancing on a go-go box inside of the pit. And for me, that was a huge plus. Your day goes by really fast. It's always something different. And you get to know your players a bit better. The cons, well, some of the players don't take you as seriously. They think that because you have a lot of cleavage, you're stupid. And they will treat you as such. And you do have to definitely put up with, you are there to be looked at. So you have to keep a sense of humor about the job. You can't get upset when people walk up to the table and talk to only your top half. It's just part of the job.
Okay, so given the same casino, what pays better? Which one?
That varies from casino to casino, but usually the party pits pay better. Because it is a tip-based type of job, mm-hmm. you do tend to make better tips when you're dancing or slightly less covered. So that, for me, that was a huge pro to working in the party pits. I made a lot more money than I would have.
So let's assume one of these party pit dealer girls gets really long in the tooth, maybe 34 years old or something like that.
Oh, 34 is old.
Oh, ancient. Oh. Hope I never get to be that old.
Oh, welcome to Vegas.
Now, how many of them take a career path inside the casino? And if so, what do they do?
Well, there's actually two very common paths party pit dealers will take when they start getting ready for something different. I won't say long in the tooth, but quite commonly the girls that have been successful dealers, the ones that have gone above and beyond, who've learned other games besides, you know, the initial blackjack and three-card poker, but they'll go on to become VIP hosts inside of the casino or to be floor personnel. That's pretty common, and I would put a percentage on it because I just don't know, and I'm sure I'd get called out with all the mathematicians around. Not quite as common, but it does happen. Girls will go ahead and switch over to being like a black and white house dealer. And when they do that, they tend to go to the nicer casinos. You know, they'll go into the Wynn or they'll go into the Bellagio because they have the people skills and the patience.
When you say black and white, do you mean they dress like a police car?
Like a penguin.
Like a penguin. All right. In regular tables at most casinos, tips are shared. Now, is that generally the rules in party pits, or is it a different rule?
It changes by pit, and I don't know what the percentages are. The ones I worked in, we did all pool tips, but we only pooled inside of the party pits. We didn't also pool with the rest of the dealers. So the rest of the dealers would pool with each other, and then the party pit girls would pool. But that really depends. One of the agencies in town that staffs a lot of pits, the girls keep their own. And it can change. It varies.
So you have a preference one way or the other?
The places I worked, I preferred that we pooled because there are times when you just can't help that your table is dead. No matter how bright and sunny and wonderful you're being, sometimes you just can't keep people there. Or sometimes you get players that just don't tip. And when you're in one of the pits where you rotate dealing and dancing, I think it's better to pool as well because you're not having the opportunity to make the tips on the go-go box. I mean, you'll make a little, but not that you would at the table.
Mm-hmm.
So,
on the tipping, if you're sharing tips and one of the girls isn't pulling her weight, do you slap her around a little bit?
You have professional words outside of the pit. And quite honestly, when I started at the Golden Gate, I was one of like the 9 original girls. And we kept each other in check because we all wanted to make more money. As the pits get larger and larger, it does get harder for the girls to police themselves. But I think in the best pits, that is what they do. So yes, if you notice someone's not pulling their weight, you have a word with them. You know, just ask if everything's okay. And
okay, now here's something a lot of us clueless men like me wonder about. I'd be interested in the female perspective, is whether it be a dealer or a cocktail waitress, you're in Vegas and she seems very flirty and nice to you, and you're not sure if she's genuinely interested or she's just trying to get a bigger tip. And you want to, get to know her better outside of the job. So what's the right thing to do?
Why, stalk her relentlessly, of course. No, I don't mean that. One of the acceptable things to do would be to give her your information. Give her your business card or write down your Facebook address or your Twitter account and give it to her. You know, let her know you're interested and say, you know, I'm interested. Here's my information. Don't ask for hers. If she's interested, she'll follow up. She'll either, you know, leave a comment on your Facebook or put that she likes your tweets or however that works. But that's a pretty acceptable way.
Okay.
How often does this happen where clearly these ladies are hit on a dozen times an hour? How often do they actually go out with guys they meet in a party pit?
Well, I think as with women in any business, it just depends on the women. It definitely does happen. You know, you're being sociable and it's people of your age range coming in and talking to you and you get to know. So it really just depends on the girls. I only did it once, so.
Can we tell that story?
I could. So you were asking how a gentleman who wants to know about if a girl in a party pit's interested. Well, if she marries you a couple years later.
Oh, so that's a that's pretty high price.
Yeah, that is. That's an expensive dinner right there. You'd be paying for years.
Okay.
Now, how many of the married girls forget to wear their wedding ring when they're party pit dealers, or vice versa? Not unmarried girls wear a ring.
That's one of the interesting things about Vegas casinos and nightlifes. You can't tell by looking at a girl's hand if she's married or not. I actually think it's more common for unmarried girls to put a giant rock on their hand, and it's just because they've gotten tired of getting hit on at work. As far as the married girls not wearing their rings, it's kind of the same thing as how many would date the guys that come in. It just depends on the girl. It really does. Some of the girls make a point of putting themselves out there as, yes, I'm available and maybe I will go home with you. And that's how they think they're going to get the tips. And then you have other ones who know and are confident enough in that I'm a good dealer. I'm providing a good service. I don't have to put myself out there that way. It really just depends.
Let me ask you something on another topic. Something we both have in common is that we both worked for the Sands Corporation. So what did you do for Sheldon Adelson?
I sang for him. Not personally, but I would have if I'd ever got the chance. I worked at the Venetian Macau as a gondolier and a stilt walker. I had an absolute blast.
Wonderful. So how long did you do that for?
About a year and a half.
Okay. And what songs did you do? Like, it seems like they usually sing in Italian, but what were the most requested songs?
Well, we do usually sing in Italian, but there's a song list, and it's pretty extensive. And some of it's English, some of it's Latin. There's some German in there, even some Portuguese arias that are okay. Oddly enough, I think the most requested songs were from Disney movies, which isn't on the accepted list, but if you had a child on your gondola and that's what they wanted to hear, I would always do it.
So what's more important, following the approved song list or making the guest happy?
From the non-manager standpoint.
What is the right answer? What's your answer?
My answer is definitely making the customer happy. Mm-hmm. They paid for that boat ride. It's their time. It's their experience. It's going to be their memory. I'd much rather they walked away happy than know that I had followed the rules exactly. Mm-hmm.
So with your experience from Macau as a gondoliere, did you ever think to work at the Venetian here doing the same thing?
Quite a few gondoliers did come back and work here. I chose not to go that route. I do think there's wonderful people working here, but I think the way it's managed is a little unnecessary. They put a lot of rules on it and a lot of regulations that just don't need to exist. It's a really fun job. You've got very talented people doing it. You don't need to be over their shoulder that tightly, you know, about which hand is on the Ramo and how tight their turns were. It just takes all the fun out of the job.
Okay. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
I'm going to go back to party pit dealing. Party pit dealing. Michael and I tend to disagree on the matter of tipping. I am in casinos to make money. And just because a girl is wearing a bikini does not give her any more right to my money than somebody wearing a more standard outfit. Whereas Michael has a different point of view of these girls go through a lot of trouble to make themselves pretty, so you should be very generous when you tip. So other than words you can't say on the radio, non-tippers, do you how do you encourage somebody to tip, or is that are you allowed to beg for tips, sort of?
No, absolutely not. You never beg for tips, and you shouldn't lower yourself to begging for tips. Quite frankly, if somebody doesn't want to, they are not obligated to. And you're under, I agree with you, that you're under no more obligation to tip a girl because she's in a bikini than if she's in a full button-up shirt. Where I disagree with you is I think you should be tipping all your dealers, not over-tipping them. You don't need to pay their rent for the month, but they're providing a service. And you, and I also agree with you that get as much money out of the casino as possible. But as you're winning that money, it's some of it, you know, you don't even have, quote unquote, yet. It should go back to the person who's providing you a service if they're doing a good job. If they're making that game entertaining and fun and it's an enjoyable experience for you, it is the service industry. And girls in the party pits, they know that's their job. So they do tend to be more fun and really make sure that that cocktail server's coming over for you and that you're laughing and that you're having a good time. And I do think that that's worth tipping. Yeah, you never beg. If somebody doesn't want to, they're not going to, and you can't make them. We might wish bad karma on them later. Uh-huh. And we will definitely bake more cookies for someone like Michael, but...
you actually bake cookies for your players?
I do. I love to bake. It's one of my hobbies, and I've learned that baked goods go a long way just to spreading goodwill. So yes, quite a few of my regular players, they even have their favorites that they'll request. So yes, I do bake for my players.
Well, I'm sure Michael dreams about your cookies.
Well, in that vein, sometimes casinos give away stuff, and I will turn around and give it as a tip to the dealers, like the Hilton used to always give away stuff, and I would pick up my thing, and then I would usually just give it to, you know, the next dealer that I dealt from, and usually it was just something that was only worth $5 or so, but they really seemed to appreciate it, and I got more, shall we say, mileage and gratitude than a cash tip. And maybe it's because they got to keep it, because you can't split up this thing. But or maybe it's because, you know, here's an actual thing, you know, it's
the gesture.
Yeah,
it shows that you really thought of them, and in that you thought of them even outside of the context of that table. Mm-hmm. But I mean, remember, they're people, and being a dealer, whether it's, you know, in a party pit or a house dealer, it's not the easiest job. You are surrounded by smoke and noise, and it is very high pressure and stress. Don't make mistakes, and someone's always watching you, and you have to be nice to people who aren't always nice to you. And so, yeah, when you get someone who does that, it means the world.
Okay, but to clarify your position, I mean, you said that you should tip all dealers. Yes. But it was also mentioned earlier by you that party pit dealers get tipped better.
Yes.
Is that just the way it is, or is that the way it should be? Because, you know, they probably put more effort into their appearance, and they're not just dealing, but they're also putting on, you know, a show for you.
Let's see if I can answer this correctly. I do think it is just the way it is by the nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think any dealer who puts the extra effort forward, mm-hmm, should be tipped extra. Mm-hmm. In this case, it just happens to be, though, that yes, not even just they're putting more into their their looks, but you know, they're also having to have the energy to go and dance and then come back and keep telling you jokes and make you happy. They're not just standing behind a table. But if you do find a house dealer who has that same level of energy and interest, I certainly think they should be tipped well as well. But it just tends that you find that more in the pits because they know that's what their job is.
Okay, well let's take two cocktail waitresses, and they both work at the same place and they both deliver drinks at the same speed with the same degree of courtesy, but one of them obviously puts a great deal of money and time into their appearance and the other one does not. I think the first one deserves to be tipped better.
Yes, because as part of the service she's providing, and it's not just on the, oh, well, she's inherently prettier, she gets more money. That is not what I'm espousing. But they put more effort into making your experience better. That's what they're there for.
Okay. I imagine you have a different point of view.
Well, I don't know. Do you consider implants to be making your experience better?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, oh, good.
And I will tip for that.
Answer. You will tip for that. Yes. Good. So you tip based on bra size. That's interesting.
I love all right. the honesty of that, though.
I actually, the ladies that I think are the prettiest would probably be too small-chested to be hired as party pit dealers, but to each his own.
That's just it, to each his own. We used to, when we first opened our pit, we used to say we were Baskin-Robbins because we had 51 flavors. There was something for everybody. We had tall, really curvy, flat, you know, short hair, long hair, and that is what makes it good, you know. I definitely don't think there should be a cookie-cutter ideal.
Do you have... Now, some guys must be tempted to let their fingers do the walking. Did you have any incidents where somebody really crossed the line and cupped way too big of a feel?
Oh, I had one that really
stands out. Why don't you tell us about that?
We were doing our pre-shift meeting where all the girls gather around a closed table just to quickly go over how the night's going to run. And don't even call him a gentleman, a male walked up behind me and in the split of an instant reached up between my legs under my skirt and just grabbed a handful. And it's one of those moments where you don't think, you just react. And I did. I clocked him square in the face and got him on the ground and put my boot right over his neck until security got there and drug him out. And I'm helping drag him. And although the best part of that is...
You're a bit irritated.
Oh, just a touch. Just a touch. I mean, he didn't even just try to, you know, grab a bit of the fringe on the bikini. He went for the whole getting caboodle. That's going to cost you more than a few drinks, fella, you know. So, as they were throwing him out, his poor wife comes out of the restroom. She missed the whole thing. Just sees her husband being dragged out for groping a dealer. Not good. Not good.
Do you know what his wife did to him after that?
I do. After our security got him to the door and was throwing him out, she then grabbed him by the collar and proceeded to beat him the rest of the way to their car.
Okay. Well, good for you and his wife. Yeah. He deserved it.
Oh, he did. But that was the worst. I mean, occasionally you'd have someone get a bit too friendly in their conversation, but as far as physically trying to grab or grope, that was by far the worst.
All right. Well, one of the many interesting things on your resume is you were Tina in Tony and Tina's Wedding. And this is, for those who aren't familiar with the show, it's basically a mock wedding. And there's just all kinds of fighting and fun. And it's just, it's made to be like you're actually at a real wedding. And, how did you like that?
I think the show itself is fantastic. It started in New York City over 20 years ago, and it's exactly as you described. It's a big Italian family, and they're having a wedding, and you're a guest at the wedding. So it's completely interactive, and it's a dinner show because, you know, dinner is part of a wedding, so you have to have a champagne toast and food. And so the show itself, I think, is a lot of fun, and playing the role was great because someone's so different from me, you know, this trashy, kind of brazen, drunken woman. So I did enjoy that, and that's all I have to say about that.
Well, here's something I've always wondered, is they have several different kind of storylines going on. Is it always the same, or do they have different storylines and, you know, kind of pick and choose which one are we going to do tonight?
It's always the same storylines.
Okay.
Some of the zingers and one-liners and what's said to the audience, that's all improv'd every night, depending on the audience. But the story itself is fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, the same person is always going to choke on a peanut, and the same character is always going to fall down drunk. And so those type of things are always going to happen.
Now, I thought the actors were just incredible. And,
yes.
And one of the funniest things is when I went... the person I went with, she kept asking about the food and saying, are there peanuts in this? Are there peanuts in this? And she was driving the staff crazy about asking about peanuts. And at the end of the show, the groom came over, Tony came over and said, I have a gift for you. Thanks for coming. And it was wrapped in a napkin. And then he quickly left. And when she opened it, it was a bag of peanuts.
Excellent. They definitely have a lot of talent in the show. There's a lot of very, very talented actors. They just need some new management.
Oh, we'll leave it at that.
So I have asked all my party pit questions.
Well, I'm curious what...
you're going to interview us. Good. Well, of course. Knock yourself out.
Well, I understand your position to tipping in as much as you are in the casino to get as much money out as possible. Totally agree and understand with that.
Yes.
But why? I mean, I'm positive you wouldn't stiff a waitress. So
correct.
What is the difference where you feel you can stiff the dealer?
Well, for the most part, I'm a video poker player rather than a table game player.
Okay.
But for most jackpots, I do not tip, except at the South Point, because I teach there. And I don't want the floor people at the South Point to say that Bob Dancer might be a pretty good teacher, but he sure is a cheap son of a gun. So I don't want that conversation. So I overtip at the South Point. But, I don't know if I overtip. I basically tip $5 for every jackpot. Under 20,000. So,
that's not over tipping. You're safe.
But at most casinos, I see no reason to tip the floor people. I don't think it improves the service. I don't think it improves the gaming experience. I am friendly, and most dealers, most floor people find me interesting and pleasant, but I'm not a heavy tipper at all. I'm not a tipper at all.
I'm just surprised. It's the idea of when you, especially you, you're very educated about it. You know when you're entering a casino, much as when you enter a restaurant, that the person providing the service is paid minimum wage or less, and that since it is a tipping industry, they make that up with their clients. So you wouldn't do it at a restaurant, but your dealer is providing the same type of thing. It's still a service industry, and it's still, you've entered into this social contract where you want the service they're going to provide.
I don't find it's a social contract. I think it's optional, and I see a big difference between tipping in a casino and tipping in a restaurant. So you can ask the question several different ways,
I just don't see the big difference. And again,
then I guess I will always be a mystery to you.
You're an enigma.
thank you.
Let me ask a question on another topic. You have been a magician's assistant, and in particular for Chris Angel, not his show, but he's done some TV specials, and I guess you were paid to be one of the people he was doing tricks to, or... Tell us more about that.
Oh, yes. I forget if it was season 4 or season 7. Sorry, it's been about 2 years now. But yes, I was paid to be the young lady in several bits where Chris Angel is going to come over and do a trick and impress me, which is a pretty common gambit on that type of magic show. And unfortunately, although he has wonderful crew working around him, and I will say he's a fantastic sleight of hand. He was a very, very good street magician when he was younger. As we were filming for the television show, there was this one particular trick where a magician rips up a newspaper and then, ta-da, it's back together. We shot all day, and unfortunately, Mr. Angel could not make the newspaper go back together, so much so that by the end of it, he stalked off the set. I picked up one of the newspapers, did the trick for the crew, and it ended up on a blooper reel. And I'm really not sure what his problem was, if he was just rattled or if it really was beyond his skill level, but it It's a pretty basic trick.
I would love to see that. How can the audience see this blooper reel?
It was up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it still is, but it used to be if you Googled Chris Angel blooper reels, you could find it.
Again, I will look for that.
All right. I'll see if I can find it for you and send you a link.
Okay. One thing I've always wondered is one of my favorite shows in Vegas that I'm really amazed by is called The Mentalist. Oh. And it stars someone named Gary McCambridge, right? And he just—it's like he's a mind reader. He might ask someone in the audience, you know, I want you to think of any city in America, and I'll come back to you. And a few minutes later, he will come back to you, and he'll say, "Was your city St. Paul, Minnesota?" And like 95% of the time, he gets it right. And do you have any idea how he does it? And can you say whether or not he uses audience plants?
Oh, yes. Well, I can agree with you that he's fantastic. I've had the privilege to meet him on several occasions, and he's both a gentleman and a very good man of magic. I have not had the opportunity to work with him, but the type of magic he does is called mentalism. There's five different designations of magic, and his is called mentalism. And I do know how he does several of his tricks because of other mentalists I've worked with who do the same tricks in the same way. And I would say pretty confidently he doesn't use audience plants. He's fantastic at observing, mm-hmm. As well as the power of suggestion. Mm-hmm. That's how he does a lot of what he does. And you won't even realize it. It's subconscious suggestions, mm-hmm. from the minute you walk into that room.
Can you give me any kind of an example?
So say he wants you to choose a particular number. He'll, mm-hmm. say, pick any number between, you know, one and a million. And over the course, before he gets you to say your answer, he'll point at something with three fingers, and he'll do it three times very quickly. And he'll repeat the question exactly the same three times before he lets you give your answer. And then, ta-da, you answer three.
Wow.
And that's a very simplistic version of it. But even with cities, that can be implanted, just the repetition of sounds he says. You know, if he manages to say peanut butter, peanut butter, peanut butter 10 times, you're probably going to come up with Palm Beach. Mm-hmm. Again, very simplistic version of what he does, but that kind of implanting it.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating, and I highly recommend his show. So tell us more, or tell us about what you're doing now with your life, and if any potential people that might want to hire you, you know, is there any way to reach you? This is your opportunity to plug yourself.
Oh, well, phenomenal. I do have a professional website. The address is a little odd, but it's nexusofsteve.com/Angela. Mm-hmm. And on there I've got my resume and portfolio, and you can contact me. The current things I'm working with, I work with A Touch of Mystery, and you can see them at atomlasvegas.com. And we're a traveling murder mystery troupe. We're run by Jay Joseph. He's been doing this for over 30 years. And he started it for team building and corporations as sort of something innovative and fun. And it's morphed into this murder mystery company. So we're often booked by casinos and private businesses for either team building or just because they're having a holiday party. And I would definitely say anyone who's interested in murder mysteries should look up A Touch of Mystery.
And this is not to be confused with Marriage is Murder or whatever it's called.
Yeah, no, we're not the one at Fitzgerald's. Mm-hmm. We're not in any one fixed location. Mm-hmm. And the other big difference is our shows are all different, whereas Marriage Can Be Murder is sort of the same show, mm-hmm. For 3-4 months at a time. We have over 20 shows, and each one is musical or not, depending on what the client wants. Mm-hmm. And it's all different time periods, from, mm-hmm. the Old West to futuristic. So we really can pinpoint it to exactly what your organization wants.
So suppose I'm a big fan of Angela Wyman, but I can't pay for the whole show. You know, is there any way just the general public can just buy a ticket for themselves?
We do sometimes do shows for the public. They're usually held at Lowry's, mm-hmm. Which is just on Flamingo off the Strip. Mm-hmm. And we publicize those through Lowry's or through A Touch of Mystery's webpage. And those, yes, the public can come into. There's also a show coming up January 27th at Don't Tell Mama. And that's going to be one of the musical murder mysteries. And I think tickets are, you know, they're only like $18.
Don't Tell Mama?
Don't Tell Mama.
Is that a restaurant?
It's the one of the piano bars on East Fremont. One of the hip young places down there that they keep building up. Thank you, Zappos.
Very good. Okay. Thank you very, very much. This was very informative. And I wish you continued success at not telling Mama.
Thank you.
And so at the end of most interviews, I ask Michael, what did we learn tonight? But since Mike has been friends with you for a long time, I assume he learned relatively little. So I'm going to ask myself, what did I learn? I actually would have predicted that most married party pit dealers would take off their rings for better tips. I was surprised that it more goes the other direction. It just so, but the next time I go to a party pit will be the first time. So, so there's a lot I don't know about it, I suppose. Michael, what's happening on the various Wizard websites?
On the Wizard of Odds, just today, I added a Keno game. It's just your basic standard Keno game. It has an autoplay feature, and this is my first game to have sound effects. So I know Keno is not exactly the most mentally challenging game, but it's a very well-loved game, and I'm running out of games to add. So so you Keno fans out there, please try my Keno game. I think it's very well done.
Sound effects. What kind of sound effects would you have in a Keno game?
It just like, you know, every time a ball is drawn and it didn't hit, it makes one sound, and if it was one of the numbers you picked, it makes a different sound, and there's a sound when you
if you get three, is a bigger hit, bigger sound than if you only got two? Or
no, I think there should be a sound if you win, and I think it should last longer if you win a lot. And I plan to improve the sound effects. I'm really not that crazy about them right now because, you know, we didn't have much to choose from. But I plan to get some better sound effects any day now, and we'll try to improve that. And we plan to add sound effects to all my games.
All right. Very good. South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That is more than anybody else. In January, earning 3,500 video poker points during the month entitles you to a free logo jacket. The double point days are done in January, and they haven't announced when they're going to be in February, but it's usually a safe bet that it's going to be on Valentine's Day and President's Day. Now, those days only have 3 days between them, so I suspect there will be a lot of out-of-town players who will make an extended stay and play during both of those double point days. The next semester of the free video poker classes will begin at South Point on Tuesday, February 5th at noon in the showroom. The exact schedule is on bobdancer.com. The new class this semester is 9-6 double-double bonus 10-play Ultimate X on February 26th. This game, returning more than 99.8%, is the highest-paying game at the South Point and is also the highest-paying game at the Palms that includes access to all promotions. At the Palms, the Friday and Saturday night drawings in January is called the $100,000 Avalanche Cash, where there's 15 winners every Friday and Saturday, five of whom get keys to a car. And on the last Saturday of the month, which is this coming Saturday, the 26th, one of those 40 ticket holders will get the car. It's worth slightly less than $40,000, or if you take the cash equivalent, slightly less than $32,000. I have one key. I hope to get one or two more, but I'm happy to get one. It has an EV of about $1,000. I wrote a column not so long ago that on these kind of winner-take-all drawings, it makes some sense to share with a friend. For example, assume Mike and I each had one key. If I win, I will pay him $10,000 maybe. And if he wins, he'll pay me $10,000. It doesn't change the EV of the proposition, and it does lower the variance. But as we were mentioning earlier in the show, make sure it's somebody you can trust before you make this deal. They might decide, oh, just kidding. The play, earn, and win gifts, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, for the last half of the month, have the theme of stowage it away. So it's containers of various sorts. The biggest prize is a $100 Visa gift card. It costs $50,000 in coin-in for the video poker players, one-tenth of that for slot players, and you keep the points. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest which begins today and goes to the end of January, features Good Times Pay Poker. This is a triple play variation where you can bet up to 10 coins per line. You receive random multipliers on each of the three times. You do receive 1x multipliers. They average 2 if you're betting 10 coins per line. So it is a neutral EV game. So you're paying for a fair multiplier. So you pay double. The average multiplier is 2. So in the contest, you're going to get 100 hands. As many of these 100 hands sessions as you want, you can play. The smartest play is to play triple double bonus. To win, you're going to need to be dealt a royal or dealt aces with a kicker, probably 2 times, and have multipliers with it. And triple-double bonus gives you a better chance at those big jackpots than any of the other games. Next week, our guest is Richard Strafella. Richard is the Vice President of Casino Operations at the Palms. I put out there asking for help in coming up with questions for Richard, and I've received a couple of dozen emails with suggestion, some of which were usable. Thank you. Looking forward to that show. In 2 weeks, our guest will be Ken Adams. Ken Adams is a man who's been a casino owner and analyst for many years. He prepares the Adams Daily Report for CDC publication. Now, you probably haven't heard of CDC, but it used to be known as Compton Dancer Consulting. I had a consulting business with Jeff Compton for a number of years. It no longer exists, but that is... and now become CDC Publications. They have a daily report that goes to the trade, and about once a month, Ken Adams does his Adams analysis. The most recent one was on Macau. It was so interesting that we asked him to come and talk to us about it. So he'll be here in 2 weeks. Okay, Michael, you've been talking about bingo. So what have you been doing with those blue-haired ladies playing bingo?
Okay. Yes, indeed. I have, as I mention every show, I've been spending a lot of my time analyzing and playing bingo lately. I feel it's one of the few areas in the world of gambling where there's still some good ground to break. And I haven't played that much bingo the last week, been real busy, but I have been analyzing it. And I've been thinking about at what point does the cashball jackpot get so big that you should validate? And it all depends on the place and the time. But for example, the 9 p.m. session at the Suncoast, which is their most lucrative session, I find that the cashball jackpot should be $5,000 or higher for your expected value to increase by validating. And the vast majority of the time, it will be less than that. And let's say that it's $4,000 and you don't validate, they will just think that you are loco. That it's $4,000 and you're not validating? Are you crazy?
They'll only think you're an idiot if you win it.
No. People validate at least 90% of the time. I think it's got to be at least 95. So it's very unusual not to validate, let alone when the jackpot gets pretty big. But no, validating in general is a lousy bet. And if it is, if the jackpot gets so big that that it's worth validating, you shouldn't be playing in the first place because it induces so much competition that you're probably not going to win anything. So as I said last week, play when the cashball jackpots are low and don't validate.
All right. Very good.
Do we have time for one more question from Angela?
We've got about 10 seconds.
I guess not. Well,
so thank you, Angela. Thank you, Michael. It was good working with you. Everybody, hit lots of royal flushes.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. My